Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Sportster Show. My name is Jim Parsons. I'm here with thesportster.com. This is episode 15. We're going to be doing a recap of Monday Night Raw. We're going to talk about AEW Fyter Fest Week 2. We've got Norman with us. He's going to join us in a couple seconds here. I just want to say, prior to you listening to this podcast, I recorded from a separate microphone due to some technical difficulties, so I sound a little bit like I'm in a tunnel. So I appreciate you bearing with us during the show and understanding that this will probably be a one-off, and we'll see how it goes from here on in. But enjoy the show. We're going to be talking Raw. We're going to be talking AEW Fyter Fest 2, and have a lot of fun. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Sportster Show. My name is Jim Parsons, as always, here with Norman Quarantine. Norman, how you doing, bud?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We struggled a little bit to come up with a topic for this week. We thought about some news items. We thought about, you know, some other stuff. It's been a little slow in terms of, like, really developing stories, really big news items. So you know what we're going to do? We're just going to cover Raw and AEW, because there's plenty to talk about from both of those shows. So we'll do a recap this week. We'll kind of talk our winners and losers from Monday Night Raw. We'll talk our winners and losers from AEW Fyter Fest Week 2, and see what each other thinks about the show. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good to me, man.
All right. Well, let's start with Monday Night Raw. This Monday, they kind of had a lot of matches. Logan Paul's return, Kevin Owens' return. Setting up SummerSlam for the most part, but we're still a good week and change away. As we record this, it is now Wednesday. So when most people hear this, maybe it'll be Thursday. So we're just over a week away from SummerSlam. Interesting show. What was your overall, and we'll get into some of the matches quite quickly here, but what was your overall take? Would you consider this a winner of a show? Were you a little lackluster? How did you take Raw?
This Raw, I thought it was, I thought I was bored, honestly. I find it kind of boring. There was a lot of stuff that didn't really sit well with me. I think that we're like on the road to SummerSlam, right? It's like fast approaching, and it doesn't, this didn't feel like, I don't know, how many Raws are left until SummerSlam? One?
Yeah.
Right? This didn't feel like the second to last Raw before SummerSlam, right? It was just weird. There was also like there was a disqualification and then a count out finish immediately after, like the following match. There was like a comedy match. It was just all over the place. There was some good stuff, which we'll get to, but yeah, overall I was just kind of bored and thought it was a little bit all over the place.
To me, I think this screams of just how maybe lackluster the actual pay-per-view is going to be. You know, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar is the big one. And they were sort of trying to push Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair as maybe the second most important match on the card. But SummerSlam just doesn't feel like it's got that big marquee ticket feel to me. Do you agree? Like, is this a show that so far seems kind of underwhelming?
I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it doesn't, they clearly have been trying to market for, actually, you know, you could say they've been trying to do this for decades now, but SummerSlam they've been trying to market SummerSlam as like the next, not WrestleMania, but like a little bit
below WrestleMania, right?
Yeah.
So it's like they're huge, basically like WrestleMania, but in the summer. And yeah, for some reason this year, I don't know. Normally, I feel like there's a little bit. It's a little bit more. A little bit more excitement in the air when SummerSlam's approaching. But yeah, something about it this year just does feel very The build's been lackluster. I don't know if everyone's distracted because of other things that are going on within the company. I don't know how much they've been sort of hamstrung by, you know, injuries and things like that. But yeah, there's just not. I'm sure the show could end up being very good, right? When expectations, typically with WWE, when we say like the card sucks ahead of time, sometimes we get pleasantly surprised and they end up putting on a good show. But yeah, the build-up's just not been fun.
Yeah, I think some of it's injury. I think some of it's just missing talent. Like it's been rare to see both Lesnar and Roman Reigns on TV in the same show.
Right.
Theory. He's supposed to be wrestling Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship, but he's busy dealing with Dolph Ziggler. It's kind of a weird, like, we have our matches, but we're not really focused on our matches. It's been like a really strange sort of build. So, last time we talked about a pay-per-view for WWE, we said, oh man, there's a lot of stars missing, but it turned out to be really good. So hopefully that's the case with SummerSlam. But let's get into Raw a little bit and talk about how the show went down. Bianca Belair and Carmella started the week. They had a Raw Women's Championship match. Becky Lynch was ringside to watch this thing. Said whoever wins is going to face Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. Well, we'll probably know that Bianca Belair is going to win this thing. For the most part, Carmella showed up okay. But then for whatever reason, I guess she just pissed off Bianca Belair at the end. And she got this look on her face like, okay, I'm going to finish this now. And she did. Kiss to death. And it was over. And there was kind of Becky Lynch grabbing the belt when the match was over and disrespecting it, and Bianca by dropping it on the mat in front of her and walking away. So the match was okay. More competitive than I suppose we would have thought. And the last two times these women faced off, because Carmella didn't get much offense in the last time, but she did okay this week. I don't know. Good opening?
Yeah, I mean, well, for start, I guess it was a good opening match. I guess we should maybe very quickly mention that Titus O'Neil actually opened the show with a very weird promo.
That's true.
We'll quickly just mention that for some reason, Titus O'Neil delivered a promo at the top of the show, which very much felt like a PR move and ended up just being really awkward and weird. But yeah, I mean, opening the show with a women's match is good, and you know it's always fun to see Bianca Belair. Becky Lynch is a huge star. I think Carmella can be fun and enjoyable when she, you know, when she wants to be. So it wasn't a complete dud. I'm pretty sure that Bianca and Becky are going to have another good match though, so at SummerSlam, so that'd be good.
Yeah, Carmella's always not surprisingly because I think to some people maybe, but she's a pretty good worker. You know, when she gets the chance to have a match that's more than, you know, 8 to 10 minutes long, she shows up. Like, when you put her in a pay-per-view because you're running out of people to have as, you know, viable opposition, she does a good job. So she did a decent job to open the show. Of course, after the Titus O'Neil speech, which I'm assuming was because you can only trot Vince McMahon out so many times to do that sort of thing. But yeah, it was an okay opening. Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch makes sense for me. And throughout the show, they pumped this match. They showed a highlight reel of their, you know, feud back and forth and things like that. It really seemed like they were trying to hammer home. There were two things for me in Raw that they really sort of tried to sell. One was the importance of the Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch match, and then the importance of next week's Raw, which is for Madison Square Garden. They're going all out for that one. They're bringing in Roman Reigns. They're having Logan Paul host his own show. Rey Mysterio's 20-year anniversary is going to be on next week. So they were pushing that. And speaking of Rey Mysterio, he was second on the card against Damian Priest and kind of loses after Judgment Day really tries to convince Dominic that it's time to join the group. They beat Ray. They are about to destroy Ray with the chair. Dominic comes into the ring and says, hey, okay, I'll join you. Just leave my dad alone. And they said, no, that's not how this works. And they blasted Dominic with the chair. Kind of a short segment that they just are like, confusing at first, but then they sort of explained it. They said, okay, well, no, this was a test, Dominic. You failed. We don't want you to just join because you think you should. We want you to want to join. You should have blasted your dad with the chair, not made us do it. And then Dom's like, no, I'm never going to do that. We're part of the family, in a separate interview later. So I thought this was a little bit confusing and all crammed together at first, and then they took some time to explain it. Do you think Dom turns on his dad? Like, the way that this 20-year anniversary is going to be celebrated next week, it's at Madison Square Garden, it's a big show, they're really pushing this thing. Is this the moment you think that Dom maybe joins Judgment Day or turns on his dad?
That would be a very bold booking decision. I'd be very intrigued to see it happening. I don't know if I can actually see them pulling the trigger on that. I think, I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, the powers that be over at WWE are very sort of very taken with their father son tag team. So I'd be surprised if they, you know, put an end to that so soon. But, yeah, I mean, the Judgment Day stuff is, I don't know. It's not working for me, man. it's not doing a lot for me, I gotta say.
Since they removed Edge from the group, they're certainly taken a step back. And that's not to blame Finn Balor. I think the timing of Rhea Ripley's injury and having the surprise of Edge re-removed and Finn Balor come in, and Finn Balor's not the leader, he's just part of the group. They seem to be an afterthought on the show, and they want people like Dom, who doesn't really make sense for that group. Mm-hmm. Their identity is lost to me now, right?
Yeah,
when you had Edge running that group, you knew what it was. Mm-hmm. Now that Finn Balor's in it and Edge is gone and they're pitching for guys like Dom, I don't know what they are anymore. And that I think to me is the big piece that's missing. We'll see if Dom does go into that group, and I think the stage is set, you know, with the 20-year celebration, but you could be right. It might not happen. It just seems like an odd fit. Why would you want Dom in that group?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Right. Yeah. I can think of, at least 30 other wrestlers that would be a better fit for your group, but you know, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're moving on. We're going to Ezekiel versus Seth Rollins. For whatever reason, Seth Rollins, after attacking Riddle, Ezekiel finds that quite offensive. So he approaches Seth Rollins in the back and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And then challenges Seth Rollins. Now, I don't know if this match was previously scheduled, but it just seemed to be impromptu. Like, Ezekiel's now all of a sudden buddies with Riddle, who, by the way, this week, Kevin Owens sort of just dropped the whole "I'm over the Ezekiel" thing, which didn't make any sense to me at all. There was no close to this. They've been going at each other for, got to be, what, close to 2 months now? And Kevin Owens just does a KO show, and he's, like, totally fine with it. Doesn't really care too much. The match was good. I thought they had to put on a good match. Seth Rollins picks up another important win here heading into SummerSlam against Riddle, and I think that matters. But I didn't quite understand Kevin Owens just having really nothing to do. He's been gone for weeks, and he comes back to a KO show, seems to not care about Ezekiel anymore, which makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
And then you've got, just really nothing going on here for two segments in a row. Sort of just seemed like filler.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. Filler. And then, yeah, you're right. Like, I think we might have even talked about this a few weeks ago on the podcast when we were talking about the Ezekiel, Elias, Kevin Owens thing. And I think we might have even mentioned that, like, they might have actually booked themselves into a corner with regards to how they were going to end this thing. And it turns out they're just not going to end it. They're just going to, just going to ignore it. And now Kevin Owens just suddenly doesn't care anymore or whatever. So yeah, there definitely wasn't a satisfying conclusion to that angle that was actually, like, pretty enjoyable. So that's disappointing. I guess Rollins needs a win before SummerSlam. So yeah, this was, filler, but I guess serviceable.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they couldn't find a better use for Kevin Owens. I understand that they didn't know that he was maybe going to be out, and they probably were going to finish this thing off somehow and then going out of commission for a few weeks and coming back. But you got to find something, right? Like, why not have a payoff and just have these two wrestle at SummerSlam or something? And maybe they'll still do that, but it doesn't seem like it based on Monday's interview. So unfortunate when you have a guy like Kevin Owens coming back and you can really take advantage of the fact that he's returning, and then you just ignore it. But Omos, I thought, looked pretty good. He teamed with MVP to face the Street Profits, which was originally Angelo Dawkins versus Omos, turned into a DQ. I think this is the match you were talking about, right? And then Usos, come and join in for the tag, another disqualification. So two kind of in a row. Oh, hang on. I think Omos actually lost the count out, right? Count out, then DQ. Is that how it went?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is a count out, and then the next match is a DQ, I think.
Yes. Yeah, because the Usos interfered and then brawled with the Street Profits to close that segment. I thought Omos looked decent. He did pick up a loss here, I suppose, technically by getting counted out, but I thought he looked pretty good. He's getting better to me. Like, I know it's small, tiny little baby steps, but to me, Omos is sort of starting to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good sign. I like seeing MVP wrestle. We don't see that very often.
Mm-hmm.
The Street Profits Uso stuff's getting a little old to me. I think they need to have this match, make it a banger, and then do whatever they're going to do with the Street Profits, because I think inevitably those two are going to split. Mm-hmm. They need to get there.
Right. Yeah, they got to move on from the Usos, and then I don't know. I don't know if they want to they want the Street Profits to sort of stay together a little bit longer before they do the split. I don't know, because I mean, they're definitely going to split them up, right? I just think there's too much potential in Montez as a single star for, and I like Angelo too, but I just think of the two of them, I think that Montez has like the bigger sort of top end there, and I can see him having, if booked correctly and utilized properly, having a really successful singles career. So yeah, I agree that they got to get there. So I guess they just got to figure out when.
Yeah, it'll be a good match. I mean, those two in the ring, or those four in the ring, is always a solid match. So that'll be entertaining. Mm-hmm. AJ Styles fights Theory coming up next. I thought this was a good match. Dolph Ziggler's at ringside again. We don't know why. We don't know technically if he's a babyface. We think he is. And I saw somebody joke that, well, he's shaved, so he's a babyface. but he's there and super kicks Theory. Theory gets counted out. So another count out. So now we've got a count out, DQ, and count out, three matches in a row. What's the story with Ziggler? Why do you think WWE has gone this direction? I mean, they're supposed to be pushing this idea that Theory is going to defend or try to take the United States Championship away from Lashley while holding the Money in the Bank briefcase. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden Ziggler's involved in this.
Yeah. And
I get that he could be the next opponent, maybe put over Theory in the process, but why do it now? Why do it 2 weeks before SummerSlam and not explain what's going on? Like, we don't even know why Ziggler is targeting Theory.
Right. Yeah. It's weird. And I feel like they've done this before, right? I feel like we had a little mini Ziggler push immediately prior to SummerSlam a couple years ago. Didn't he also, I think he had a title match at SummerSlam, maybe against Dean Ambrose or someone like that.
I remember what you talked about. I don't remember who the opponent was, but I remember them inserting him. Right. He's done it with Drew McIntyre before and other things like that. But they tend to, when they need somebody that can jump into the main event and make it believable, Ziggler's your guy, right?
Right. Yeah. So I guess that, I don't know. I guess it seems like he's there just to make Theory look good at some point and maybe just, give Theory the rub in some respect. Yeah, good for Theory, I guess.
just seems a really weird timing to me. Like, shouldn't they be selling the idea of Lashley versus Theory for SummerSlam, but they're sort of just ignoring it? Like, how do you sell the importance of that match when all you're doing is focusing on why Ziggler has turned babyface, is not with Robert Roode, and has this thing for Theory? Like,
yeah, it doesn't make sense, dude. It's really bizarre booking. And I guess, like, maybe just for some cheap pops, I guess, because I think people do like Ziggler and people do respond to I guess it hasn't been confirmed that he's a babyface now or whatever. Like, we haven't seen enough sort of evidence of that. But when he did return and attacked, Theory or whatever, it did seem like a babyface turn, and people did enjoy it. You know, it got people talking on social media, and I think people in the arena on the night seemed to enjoy it. So I think maybe that's just what you do. You just get Ziggler around to get some pops.
It'll be interesting to see if they describe or define or explain what's going on next week, because they've got one more Raw before SummerSlam. He's probably going to be on it. He's probably going to interfere with a match that Theory has, but we won't know why.
Oh, he's going to cut a promo. Ziggler will cut a promo and say something like, oh, I see a lot of myself in Theory, and then that will be as good as it gets, maybe.
Yeah. Well, who knows? But maybe WWE will come through and actually explain why there's a thing here, but they might not. That's how this works. WWE tends to do this and has a quick match, never really explains it, doesn't give you a definition, and then, or a, a storyline or an origin story to it all, and they just expect you to hop on board. Okay, let's move on to the next match, which I thought was absolutely the craps, the worst part of Raw for me. Asuka, Dana Brooke, Alexa Bliss versus Nikki A.S.H., Tamina, and Doudrop in a six-woman tag match. But the 24/7 title has not been suspended during this match. So out comes Reggie, who distracts Dana Brooke. Akira Tozawa pins him. And then you get the flood of title changes. Alexa Bliss, Nikki A.S.H., Tamina, I mean, I'm missing people, but it eventually winds up back with Dana Brooke again. She runs off. Asuka taps out Nikki A.S.H. for the win here. This was a cluster, you know what? Like, this was just really, really bad. I don't know. Like, is it as bad to you as it was to me?
Yeah. It was just a mess, and it wasn't fun. Like, a mess. You can have a mess, and it can be a fun mess. This wasn't really that. It was just stupid, and I don't know, cramming six women onto the card, just so you can say that you've, you know, given them opportunities or whatever, and then they have a 2-minute match, and yeah, just hated it.
Yeah, well, and Alexa Bliss being involved here too, not that I want to separate her from the other five women, but she should be above this. This isn't something that she should be trying to compete for the 24/7 title. Yeah. Reggie and Dana Brooke, and Reggie helping out Akira Tozawa. Well, how does that make any sense? Like, there's just, it's so illogical and so silly.
Asuka shouldn't be anywhere near this either, really. Asuka shouldn't be anywhere near it. And then, yeah, I don't think any of them should be, really. I mean, maybe Tamina, but yeah, I don't think it's fair on any of them to have to be involved in just cringe messes like that.
Another segment that I don't know hit necessarily very well, but I will give them a little bit of credit here because I believe the WWE Universe Alive crowd really wanted to boo Logan Paul. And somehow The Miz and Logan Paul managed to avoid that happening in the segment. So The Miz TV brings out Logan Paul. Logan Paul calls him out, challenges him for SummerSlam. Miz doesn't want to, says, you haven't earned this. You're still a rookie. Singles match is a whole lot different than me being your tag partner at WrestleMania, so no. And then, of course, Logan Paul talks about his blueberries and his tiny little balls, and Miz gets all upset and says, okay, fine, you're on. I accept. Logan Paul says he's going to host his own Impulsive TV for next week at Madison Square Garden. So kudos to these two, because Logan Paul is the guy you want to boo real bad. And I don't know if WWE is going to find out the hard way next week that the fans don't want to cheer Logan Paul, but they managed to push this, kick this down the curb for another week. So we'll see. Impulsive TV, don't know what that's going to look like, but it's going to open up a lot of opportunities for the fans to sort of chew Logan Paul up and spit him out. How badly do you think this goes for next week?
Man, good question. Cause I don't know. So I'm not, it feels that it's just weird to try to book. I mean, I guess it kind of like, so at least there's like kind of a story here going back to WrestleMania, because The Miz obviously attacked Logan Paul after the match, although why he did that, we don't really know. I guess stealing attention from him or something like that. Logan Paul's just so naturally unlikable and people don't like him. So it's just very interesting that they're trying to sort of push him as like a babyface. And I think him being involved with WWE and them signing him to a deal or whatever, I don't really have any issues with that. I think, you know, I'm not positive that they're going to actually get a return on their investment in the way that they think they are. But I can see why they've done that. But yeah, just trying to make him like a white meat baby face. I don't know if it's going to fly, and it seems like it's not going to.
Yeah, I'm on board with you. I think that Logan Paul's a decent decision. I get the appeal. He's a huge crossover star. He claims, and maybe he's right, the most popular podcast in the world. Mm-hmm. He's got millions of subscribers. I mean, the guy brings in an audience, but like you said, he's naturally the guy you want to boo. And that may be just because of his past. Maybe it's because he's got a lot and people don't feel like he's working hard to get it. I don't know what the story is, but they do want to boo him. So why not give the fans what they did it with Lacey Evans? Give the fans what they want. Let them boo the crap out of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this closed the show. So it was an interesting way to close Raw. I think it was a risk, because if it doesn't go the way they wanted it to go and is sort of teetering on maybe you know, not panning out like they're hoping. I thought it was an interesting way to close the show. Overall, if you had to rate the show out of five, what would you give it?
Out of five, probably like a 1.5. Maybe a one or two if I'm being generous. But yeah, I didn't like it.
I was kinder than you when I did my live show on Facebook after Raw. I had given it a 3. I called it very average. Not great. Not anything. The 24/7 stuff was the worst part. Nothing else was terrible. Just nothing was good. You know, it wasn't like anything on it was just wonderful. And you're like, oh, that's memorable. It was a very forgettable Raw, considering that they're trying to build to SummerSlam. And I thought, you know, not great. All right, let's move on to AEW's Fyter Fest Week 2, which, as we do this podcast right now, has ended a couple hours ago. I thought this was a much better show than Raw. There was a lot of good in-ring action. A couple things that I wasn't totally on board with, but
yeah.
The card was set up to be the barbed wire everywhere match between Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho. There was a match with John Moxley and Wheeler Yuta versus the Best Friends. Christian Cage and Luchasaurus had a thing. The opening match, though, Darby Allin and Brody King, I thought that might have been the best part of the entire show. Darby Allin took a beating here. This was Brody King just chopping him all around the arena, throwing him like crazy, to the point where I got uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, especially the finisher pile driver where he kind of had him up and then dropped him in like a, I don't know what it was, like a razor's edge into a pile driver. Jeez, that's just, that's iffy to me.
Yeah. Like
that just seems so risky.
Yeah.
I know Darby Allin doesn't seem to care, but man, oh man, if that goes wrong even by an inch, that's.
There were quite a few pile drivers on this show, and you don't realize how, because we don't see them in WWE these days, really. When you see them in AEW, it's shocking, right? And because there was another match a little bit later where there was actually the Best Friends match. There was two pile drivers, like one after the other, and I winced, man. I winced. Like, they pulled it off, and yeah, I'm glad that they did. And but yeah, man, it's just weird to see pile drivers still. But yeah, this opening match, it was great. I enjoyed it. Darby, like what you were saying about Darby, he has this like bizarre sort of talent where he always looks, when he's taking like a big bump, it looks like he's about to get seriously hurt until the last millisecond, and then he just turns whatever appendage or body part looks like it's about to get hurt into like the proper position, right? And then manages to avoid a serious injury. He's just like made of rubber or something. But yeah, there was a few bumps in this match where I thought, you know, if he hadn't have sort of change position at the very last millisecond, he would probably be in a wheelchair. But yeah, fun stuff.
there was that one move where Brody King grabs him by the belt and just flings him around into the ropes, and I thought, man, that's reckless. I mean, maybe they know and maybe they're expecting it, but I just thought, holy moly, that could go wrong. And the pile drivers aren't just like Jerry Lawler pile drivers. These are pile drivers coming from a series of moves that turn into a pile driver. Like,
right.
The one with Best Friends was off the corner, and then Trent did a typical pile driver, but still, like, you're right. There's a lot going on here where there's moving parts and everything has to go just perfectly to make it work. What's the story with Brody King? Like, why do you think that they're pushing him so heavily? Like, he's still attached to House of Black, and Malakai Black came out and they had this sort of stare down with Miro later. But why Brody King? Why are they pushing him so heavy?
So, I mean, I've been a Brody King fan for years. I live in Southern California, and Brody was a Southern California independent stalwart for a long time. Still performs at PWG pretty regularly. He's just really good, and he's just an absolute unit. He's kind of agile and spry despite his size. In real life, a very, very, very nice guy. I think he commands respect of the locker room just by being a nice person and being talented. And yeah, I think they just I feel like Tony Khan just feels like pushing this big boy with loads of tattoos, which, you know, more power to you.
Yeah, the end, I thought the match was great. The end was a little bit much for me. You know, you got Sting come down, and then he gets spit in the face, and they
beat
him, and then Miro comes down, and I don't understand the connection there.
Yeah, the Miro thing. So that was one of the things I didn't quite get. Like, it's cool to see Miro, and he got a big pop and all that, but I don't understand. It just didn't really make sense. He just showed up, and then, you know, he's just mad at House of Black or whatever, which is, you know, if he's feuding with House of Black, so then I guess he's a babyface or something, which I guess... it's easy to make Miro baby faces because he's so charismatic and people just are going to cheer him no matter what. Like even when he was a heel as TNT champ, people were cheering him the whole time. But yeah, I didn't understand the connection. And yeah, so I'm kind of intrigued to see where it goes for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know that they're going to oppose each other. For all we know, they're going to join forces. Like, it should be really interesting to see how they turn that. But it did seem kind of out of the blue, especially when you're pushing the Sting and Darby Allin connection.
And I wrote over a year ago now, I wrote a feature about how I thought it was time for Sting and Darby Allin to part ways. I think they've outgrown the need for each other. I don't think Sting, you know, I think Darby has already got the rub. He doesn't need Sting by his side much longer. And it's kind of like, I mean, the relationship was always a little bit sort of, or the connection was always a little bit tenuous. It was just like they're two guys who wear face paint, so let's put them together or whatever. I love Sting. I love Darby Allin. I don't think I need to see them as a duo much any longer, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. We talked a little bit about best friends, Wheeler Yuta, John Moxley pick up the win over that one. We don't need to go into that match, but we should talk a little bit about the Christian Cage and Luchasaurus development. So to me, great to have Jungle Boy back, but what are they doing? You know, like you've got weeks and weeks of building these two together. We don't exactly know why Luchasaurus has agreed to follow Christian's lead, but as soon as Jungle Boy shows up, he looks at him, steps aside, and lets Jungle Boy chase him down. So
yeah,
I don't know if they just abandoned the Christian Cage and Luchasaurus thing, if there's more they're planning on explaining here. Mm-hmm. Did that seem like an odd choice to you?
Yeah, I totally agree. So it's cool to see Jungle Boy back. That was great. Fantasy booking, but in my mind, I thought they were going to stretch this out for a little bit longer and have Christian be pulling the strings and be in command of Luchasaurus for longer and have order Luchasaurus to beat down Jungle Boy, right? Until eventually there's like a slow build and finally, you know, Jungle Boy is able to sort of unindoctrinate Luchasaurus and turn him back to the good side or whatever. So I thought we were going to get like a nice long sort of long-term storytelling angle here. We might still get that, right? We don't know. There wasn't any sort of embrace or hugging or chatting between Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. All he did was step aside. So there's a way out there. But yeah, I certainly was expecting a little bit more from this. But yeah, it was fun to watch Jungle Boy chase Christian through the crowd.
Okay, we'll keep moving. We're running a little low on time here, so we'll fly through until we get to this last match here. But Cole Carter faces for the FTW champion against Ricky Starks. Cole Carter, people don't know, is kind of the guy that was in NXT just recently and was swimming with the fishes. They made reference to it. He was booted for failing a wellness test, I think is what happened. Quickly, 30 seconds, what did you think of Cole Carter's appearance in AEW?
I mean, he's young. He's got a lot of potential. I thought it was cool to see him. Very interesting that he shows up so soon after being kicked out of WWE. But yeah, I mean, good for him.
What about FTR's promo? I thought this was one of the biggest moments of the night, especially Dax. He talks about his daughter and fighting through the heart transplant or, you know, not having to have it, things like that. I thought that was a really good promo, setting up the Briscoes match for Saturday night for Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Was this one of the better promos that you've seen in a while?
Yeah, loved it. FTR can do no wrong, especially Dax. He's MVP. He's probably my MVP of the year of 2022 in all of wrestling. I'm not going to lie. He's just been phenomenal. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, that Briscoes rematch. Yeah.
Yeah. For those that want to watch it, you'll have to subscribe or get the Ring of Honor pay-per-view on Saturday, but it should be worth it. If anybody saw the first match between these two teams, it's definitely going to be a candidate for match of the year for sure. And the second one should probably be just as good. These two teams, they just have amazing chemistry together. Let's jump all the way to the end just for the sake of time. The barbed wire everywhere match between Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho. I know what they were trying to do here. And to me, it seemed like they wanted to sort of make up for the death match that Moxley and Eddie Kingston had.
Yeah.
And it didn't work again to me. I didn't think this one was as good. I thought this screamed of Jericho just sort of taking as many bumps and, you know, wailing away in the barbed wire as much as he could. The end when they threw him off. I mean, Eddie Kingston loses here, which I'm not sure exactly why they did that.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And then they throw Jericho into the, I don't know what you call it, the pit of barbed wire. Didn't land like I think it was supposed to, and they barely got a reaction from the crowd. What? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, trying to get the guys out of the cage, she couldn't, Tay Conti couldn't open the lock, so they all just squeeze out of the bar. I mean, it missed on a bunch of levels for me. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought so. I would say that it was a chaotic mess. I can't, for the most part, I've kind of enjoyed it. I think Eddie Kingston is actually so charismatic that he can kind of turn segments that aren't good into slightly more enjoyable than they should be. But yeah, I totally agree with you. There were a lot of missed spots. It was kind of messy. Very, very overbooked. Way too much stuff going on. Not all of it was even relevant or made any sense. I guess we did have the Anna Jay turn, but it's like, they should have saved that for its own thing. That should have been like its own segment, really, right? Because that's, I don't know, Anna Jay linking up with the Jericho Appreciation Society should be a bigger deal. And then instead it was just kind of an afterthought in the middle of all this chaos. And then the cage thing, I mean, I don't like shark cage matches anyway. I think they're kind of stupid. It's like, can't they just be banned from ringside? I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff went wrong. So it wasn't the best way to end the show. But luckily, I think, and if you're going to have Eddie Kingston stand tall, just have him win the match, you know?
Yeah, he was clearly disappointed at the end of it all. Do you think this match signifies to Tony Khan that maybe he needs to cut it out with these barbed wire matches? Because every one they try to do tends not to go well. Like the explosions didn't work on the first one.
Right.
And everybody just knocked AEW like crazy for it. This one, I think, is going to get run through the ringer too. It was better. But it wasn't. It certainly didn't land, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think Tony and AEW just says, you know what, let's just screw these. Let's do something else.
I think, I don't know. I really, really enjoy AEW and have done, you know, basically since they launched. I think they've been pretty consistent and put on some really quality shows. I do think that they should call it a little bit on the gimmick matches, like just kind of pump the brakes a little bit. I can't actually see that happening. I think Tony Khan's pretty stubborn, but I don't know. We'll see.
So if you had to rate this show out of 5, where would you rate it?
I'd probably give this a 3.5, maybe a 4. Yeah, maybe 3.5, I say. Because the thing is with AEW, they've raised the bar so high, like the expectations are so high. So, and they've been delivering pretty good shows lately. So this was, I would say this was, you know, decent. Definitely better than Raw.
Yeah, I'll give it something close, maybe just a slight edge over Raw, 3.5. If I gave Raw a 3, I'll give this one a 3.5, maybe 3.75. I thought it was better than Raw. There were some misses on this show for sure, but the Brody King Darby Allin match was good. The FTR promo was great. I thought this was a much better showing for them. I do have one more question before we close off the show, though, because of this last match and the barbed wire and the blood and all that stuff. I can't help but think about what WWE is thinking about doing and turning their program into a TV-14 program for Raw. Quickly, take a minute. What do you think is going to happen? Is this going to be a TV-14 show? Because it's not official yet. And if it is, what are we going to see?
Yeah, do you mean just WWE moving forward in general?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a slow burn, right? I don't think it's going to be like suddenly their TV-14 and then suddenly we're going to get like more violence and swearing or whatever. I think it's going to be a slow burn. I think if anything, I think it probably just gives them a little bit more flexibility. I would imagine that they are going to keep the show as is and then take advantage of that TV-14 thing whenever they can, you know, for promos or blood here and there or whatever. I don't think we're going to see a big drastic overnight change though. That's for sure.
I think fans are expecting that might be the case, but I agree with you. I think if they're going to do this, it'll be a gradual move. All of a sudden we'll hear an S word here or something bomb there or whatever. We might get some edgier angles. I think some of it's going to be maybe just touching on some societal stuff that they've avoided for the last 2.5 years because of COVID and pandemic and people's wellness and all that other stuff. I think maybe they figure, well, maybe it's been enough time. We can go back there again in a little bit. So that could be what they do. I don't expect that we're going to see a barbed wire everywhere match in WWE in a couple of weeks. I don't think you're going to see blood all over the place. Although maybe Cody Rhodes will be the first one to take advantage of it. We'll find out. But
yeah.
All right. Well, we'll close her off there. I appreciate you coming on, doing a recap of Raw and AEW Fighter Fest week 2.
No worries.
For everybody else, we appreciate you listening. Download, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. go to thesportster.com, check out all the winners and losers for both shows, and we'll talk to you guys next week. I'll be on vacation, but I'm going to make some time just to make sure we have another show. Norm, thanks again.
Thanks, man.
Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.